Support for Out in the Bay comes from Comcast, dedicated to serving California communities with access to technology, volunteering time, providing financial support, and connecting people in need to high-speed internet at home. More at california.comcast.com. Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay. I'm Eric Jansen. This week, a look at California politics from a queer perspective. How are California policymakers and politicians serving the state's LGBTQ residents? What current political issues are most important to LGBTQ Californians? And how are young queer Californians getting engaged with civics and policy formation in the state capital? In this half hour, we'll hear from a couple of Sacramento insiders about efforts to address, to name just a few issues, housing and violence prevention for transgender women in prison, how COVID-19 affects LGBTQ people, there's little to no data now, safety and equal treatment in schools, and if we have time, efforts to equalize how teen sex is treated criminally. Penalties are currently much harsher for same-sex partners than for their hetero peers. With me to talk about these issues and more are Tammy Martin, legislative manager and lobbyist for Equality California, the nation's largest statewide LGBTQ civil rights organization. Welcome, Tammy.
Thank you.
And Severiano Christian, consultant for the California Legislature's LGBTQ Caucus and a recent alum of the Equality California Institute Comcast Fellowship, a program for college students to learn about civic engagement and politics in Sacramento. Welcome, Sevi.
Hi there.
Let me start by asking each of you what you see as key issues important to LGBTQ Californians that lawmakers are or should be addressing in Sacramento. Who wants to start? Tammy, I'll just start with you. How's that?
Sure. Well, hey, everybody, and thanks for having us. So you mentioned data and COVID, and obviously this is top of mind for everybody right now with the health crisis going on. I thought it'd be a good opportunity to talk about data collection at the state level. And this is something that actually Sevi and I have been working on together this year. And his their boss, Senator Wiener, has a bill, SB 932, to increase data collection in the COVID context or other communicable diseases and how that impacts LGBTQ plus people. Because right now, we just don't have comprehensive data about the impact on our community. We know that communities of color are disproportionately impacted and other subgroups as well, but because data is not being collected about LGBTQ plus people, we can't see what the impact is and therefore we can't adequately address what's going on. So that is something that we've been working hard on. We are seeing all of the challenges that exist in the data collection chain, starting with providers, going to county health officials, and all the way up to the state, because there have been previous efforts in California to collect data, SOGI data, as we call it, sexual orientation and gender identity data. And it's just really tough. It is a technical thing, and we're hoping this bill will push that along. So that's one. I'm sure, Sevi, is there anything you want to add to that? I'm sure we'll talk about it more later too.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head with the data collection issue. I think that one thing that we've been noticing and kind of the impetus for the bill in and of itself is that the minimal studies that we have right now about COVID-19 are scary, but we do see that historically marginalized communities are being disproportionately affected. And because the LGBTQ community has things like high rates of smoking or potentially, you know, with high rates of HIV and being immunocompromised, if we're not collecting the data, we're not being able to measure the kind of disparities that will take place. And we won't be able to actually properly allocate resources. So I think Tammy did a really great job of summarizing that bill and that issue that we're working on. And I'm sure we'll get to talk about it a bit more later.
Yeah.
Well, actually, as long as we're already talking about it in some depth, what kind of opposition are you getting to this bill? Are there people who are saying, like, we don't want to collect this data? We don't think we should have it?
To be frank, the way that the bill was originally crafted, we did have opposition from the health officers who, as we now know, who, you know, formerly unknown to most people, local health officers have a really pivotal job in mitigating the outbreaks of all communicable diseases. and making strategies to do so. But because we had basically expedited what a research process that would be done in about 3 or 4 months with bills usually was basically crammed into, I don't know, Tammy, would you say probably at least less than a month? And so we were doing our best to try to get a bill into its best form possible. And we're luckily, through incredible partnerships with Equality California, obviously through the work of Senator Wiener and other stakeholder groups, including our another sponsor on the bill, the California LGBTQ HHS Network, we're able to work with the health officers and work with Senate Health Committee in order to craft the bill in a way that would remove their opposition. And so there is no formal opposition to the bill anymore, which is great. We've actually had this bill be unanimously supported by both Republicans and Democrats alike, which is always a really incredible thing to see. I don't think that anybody's necessarily not wanting to collect this data. We're just now in the process of trying to figure out how we can best equip providers to do so in a way that is respectful of other people, and in a way that prepares the state mechanisms to actually be able to, you know, to have the capacity to collect that data.
Yeah, I would echo everything that Savi said. And there's, even though there's not formal opposition, you know, any of the current concerns that we do hear are usually resolvable. Like sometimes people worry about privacy, but with this data, just as the way data is currently collected for race and ethnicity, it's all voluntarily provided. No one is going to have to provide this information about themselves if they don't want to or if they're not comfortable with that. And then the information remains confidential in an identifiable way. So no one's going to know beyond the person collecting it who provided that information. So that's something we're very mindful of. And it's just aligning that SOGI data collection with the way data is currently collected for other things like race and ethnicity.
So what's the rest of the prospect towards passage? I mean, where does it go from here?
So right now the bill, if all goes well, the way that we understand it, it will be heard in Assembly Health Committee. We anticipate that because it had such strong support behind it, because the governor himself has been publicly supportive of this issue, and because the Department of Public Health has been supportive of this issue, we think that it's looking really, we're cautiously optimistic, but we're in the same regard trying to figure out the ways that we can get this bill into the best shape possible so that when, because it has an urgency clause and would take effect immediately, for when it does get passed, we want everything to be really tight knit so that providers are able to collect this data, send it to local health officers, and local health officers can move it up the chain, and that there will actually be a place for it to be stored.
Another big one, you know, also related to COVID is the situation in prisons right now. And we know that there's an emergency in many prisons in California. The one that people are probably most often hearing about right now is San Quentin, where people are unable to escape the virus in that setting. And, you know, we're concerned about their safety. We're concerned about measures being taken in that context. But Savi and I also are working on another bill since last year, actually, called SB 132. And this would give transgender incarcerated people more agency over their housing placements and to more easily express where they feel safest being housed. Because right now the default is that they're housed by their sex assigned at birth. And often that's a very unsafe situation for them, as well as an invalidating situation for them. So Savi, I'll let you take it from here on that one.
Yeah, I think that it's always important to note that with this bill in particular, it's connected to a much larger issue that I know that both Equality California and my boss, Senator Wiener, are incredibly passionate about. And that's finding that linkage between, you know, obviously we're focusing here on the way that trans women of color in particular are experiencing disproportionately a lot of mistreatment in settings where they're incarcerated. But that's also connected to the overall criminalization of that trans women of color experience outside of carceral settings as well. And so you know, when you think about the larger scheme of things, this is just connected to the ways in which trans women are not always able to access the same kind of economic opportunities that their cisgender counterparts are. So they might have to resort to, supporting themselves in ways that could end up landing them as incarcerated. And so finding that linkage and recognizing it is critically important for the overall liberation of trans people in its entirety. But what I think also is just important to note that it's not like it's more of a harm reduction bill. There's never really going to be a time where prison isn't an entirely safe place for anybody, regardless of their gender identity. But this bill would, as Tammy said, give folks the agency to say, hey, I'm being mistreated, or I fear for my life because of who I am. I can't change that. I should have the ability to voice these concerns, have them properly addressed. And so as means of saving my life most times. So another group, Trans Latina Coalition in Southern California, has played an incredibly pivotal role. And so again, with this bill, we are also cautiously optimistic after lots of negotiations with CDCR that we are in a good place, that we can get something done, which means a lot, especially right now when we see massive outbreaks happening in different settings where folks are incarcerated.
CDCR is the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, is that it?
Yes.
You're listening to Out in the Bay, Queer Radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. My guests are Tammy Martin, Legislative Manager and Lobbyist for Equality California, the nation's largest statewide LGBTQ civil rights organization, and Severiano Christian, Consultant for the California Legislature's LGBTQ Caucus. I do want to ask you a little bit about your jobs and how you spend your days. Tammy Martin, your title is Legislative Manager for Equality California, and you're a registered lobbyist. So, you know, briefly, what do you do and what's a typical day like, if there is such a thing for you?
There's not such a thing as a typical day. There are seasons in this work, though, that go with whatever time during the legislative cycle we're at. I know Sevi goes through these seasons as well. But, you know, some days I'm locked in my office all day working on drafts of things and by myself. And some days I'm walking down the halls of the Capitol with a bunch of stormtroopers who are there for Disney Lobby Day or whatever they were here for. So there's a whole range of characters in the Capitol. Jeff Goldblum was there. Was it earlier this year, Sevi, for an environmental bill of some kind?
Yep, that feels like years ago, but yeah.
Before everything changed. But I think my job kind of falls into maybe four main buckets. So we've got the planning side of things, and that happens mainly in the September to January range after session concludes. And so that's when we do a lot of planning for the next year or the next session, which starts in January of each year. And then there's, you know, what I would call maybe member interactions. And this is probably what people typically think of as quote unquote lobbying. And these are the meetings that we go to about our bills, to take the temperature, to identify and address concerns that specific legislators have, and also talk to them about floor votes or committee votes, et cetera. And then there's a lot of drafting. So things like drafting letters of support or sponsorship, drafting bills, depending on, you know, where the bill came from. And then there's the committee bucket. This involves things like testifying. So I often go into a committee when the bill is heard, if it's our sponsored bill or one that we are strongly supporting, and I'll testify at the dais and explain who I am and why our organization supports the bill and why it's important to the LGBTQ+ community. For committees, we also organize the community to come in and do what's called Me Toos. And this just, a Me Too is basically a member of the public comes into committee, well, when we did things in person, they would come into committee, go up to the microphone, say, my name is such and such. I represent such and such organization if they are affiliated, and I support this bill. In committee, we'll try to organize as many of those as we can because it goes to show each committee member that this bill has broad public support and that people care enough to actually come in person and express that. But now that's all being done via phone, and that's something your listeners can do as well. If they hear about a bill they're really invested in, they can call in when a bill is heard in a committee and voice their support or opposition, as the case may be. Now and then, we will oppose a bill. We don't do a lot of that. So if we do, it's a pretty big deal. That's always a good time. So that's a summary of my job. Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good. Sevi, that's actually, you sent me an email the other day, and one of the things you mentioned in that email was that you monitor pending legislation going through the Senate to ensure that it doesn't adversely affect LGBTQ Californians. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. And I mean, like Tammy said, it's thankfully not very often in California that we have to deal with bills of that kind, but it does happen. So luckily, I have such a strong ally like Equality California, which of course helped me get my start in the Capitol. It's always a nice reinforcement to have Equality California say, yes, we've actually been monitoring this as well. We do find this problematic. Here's how we think that we should address it. And sometimes it's super blatant and you're like, totally get why this would be problematic. And sometimes you have to read between the lines and think about the ways in which different facets of our community might be affected. So that is always a fun part of my job. And I'm more than happy to give a general overview of, to my best ability, of what the rest of my job looks like too, if you'd like.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, go ahead. If it's not, not too long.
Yeah, no.
It sounds like there's a lot of details.
Yeah, I will try to be as succinct as possible in the way that Tammy was. In general, with the caucuses legislation, we have 7 members in the legislature. We have our caucus priority bills that I'm at any moment's notice expected to understand where they are throughout the legislative process, what we may need to do to help the chances of pushing those through. And the same is true for budget priorities. And so organizations, for a myriad of reasons, will come to the caucus and say, we need this much money in order to fulfill these obligations. Can you please help us? Ultimately, we will decide, and it's my job to try to get those things through the budget process and try to advocate for our community to my best ability. Unfortunately, this year, because of the state of our budget, it's not necessarily been a matter of people asking for funding, but trying to protect their funding, which has been incredibly humbling, but a really good exercise in my own advocacy. So,
Sevi, you mentioned that you got your start with Equality California, and I imagine you're talking about the institute with Comcast, the fellowship that you went through 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Can you tell
us
a little bit about that?
Honestly, I remember getting an email from somebody. I was working at a nonprofit at the time in Chico, California, and I got an email about the EQCA Comcast fellowship and was like, well, you know, I've always been interested in politics, but I don't know if I would get chosen. And then Tammy actually was the first person to email me and say that they've offered me an interview. So I was obviously super stoked and was, you know, thankfully enough, selected as one of the, I believe, 6 at that mm-hmm. time, Comcast fellows, and was placed in Assemblywoman Blanca Rubio's office. And during that time, you know, I think whatever fellowship or internship you get in the legislature is going to be what you make it. And I'm super grateful that my mentors in that office gave me a lot of work, but I remember writing, you know, to my, like, texting my friends and being like, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm in the Devil Wears Prada, because people, like, every 10 seconds you're like answering your phone. You're like, oh my gosh, I have to do this and I need to do this. But it's all structured. And so I really loved that and, you know, was able to write different briefing memos for my boss at the time, was able to research policy and write support letters, and was really fascinated with the nuts and bolts that went into policy crafting. And so from there, I was like, well, I have to come back. And so I applied for the Capital Fellows Program, the Assembly Fellowship and Senate Fellowships in particular, and was able to come back after graduating from Chico State. And after that year-long program, was able to land a job doing what I love. So I'm super thankful for Equality California and literally wouldn't be here without them.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Tammy, you used to manage this program in your current job as a lobbyist. You're helping guide the fellows through what's going on in the Capitol. Of course, it's been more difficult this year with COVID.
Right. From 2016 through 18, I managed the fellowship program. And so I got to help pick the fellows, organize their networking opportunities. I helped support our legislative team up here in finalizing their office placements. So it was a great experience. I'm so happy about SEVI and love working with SEVI. And we have other fellows that are working in the Capitol now as well, and just so many great people. But some background on the fellowship, in case people are curious, it's a 4-week full-time fellowship. And as SEVI mentioned, it's typically a cohort of 6 college students. This year, we revamped the program because we were not able to do an in-person fellowship because of COVID. So we turned it into instead a 10-person virtual fellowship where we still tried to facilitate fellows' interaction with members and staffers and other people in Sacramento, but they did more of a classroom-style fellowship. But typically, yeah, we place each fellow in a different legislative office, and they get to do whatever the office wants them to do. It could be work on bills, going, you know, with the member to different meetings and supporting them in those. So they get an experience, like a real in-depth experience about what it's like working in the Capitol, even though it's a very condensed period of only 4 weeks. And then, like I said, we also coordinate networking meetings for them over lunch or dinner, and we cover the cost of that so that they can go and meet with people who are working in Sacramento in a variety of fields, not just legislative work, but usually related to that because it's Sacramento. So it might be a communications firm that does political PR, something like that. But we try to give them a variety of perspectives and connections so that they can take that and run with it afterwards. So if any college students are listening, check out our fellowship next year. Hopefully we'll be back to normal. We'll see.
Yeah. Yes. When we spoke on the phone, SEVI, you did mention that it was great for networking, that you might never have the job you have now if it hadn't been for the people you met during this fellowship.
Yeah, literally. I don't remember if it was maybe the first or the second or the third. I mean, we had a variety of lunches with people within the Equality California Fellowship that work in Sacramento, in or around the Capitol. And I attribute a lot of where I have gotten through because of those connections. Like, while I know that things look different this year for fellows in the Equality California Comcast program, and hopefully they are back to normal next year. Even if they're not, I still wholeheartedly believe that this program does set college folks up to make long-lasting connections in a way that will help them, regardless of whether or not they're trying to jump into public policy or what have you. Just because their public policy impacts literally everything.
We are really grateful for the support of our sponsor for this program, which is Comcast. And we've had this program since 2010. So it's a long running one. We've had over 100 fellows, which is just really fantastic. And it's, I believe it was the first LGBTQ fellowship for college students in the US. It's had a tremendous impact. And like SEVI was saying, it's an important pipeline for young LGBTQ plus leaders, but it's also an important way to make sure that other non-LGBTQ people in the Capitol are interacting with our community and seeing us and knowing that we are real people and we have real concerns. And that goes a long way in shaping the climate as well.
Yeah, I can imagine. The presence is an important thing just by itself. I understand from the Comcast folks when I spoke with them that this program, the Equality California Comcast Fellowship, was patterned after a similar one for Latino students, which was pre-existing. Are there similar programs or experiences supported by other companies, you know, whether it's for LGBTQ folks or other interest groups? You know, if I were a college student looking for an internship or fellowship in politics or policy, where else can one look?
Yeah, well, the first one that comes to mind, it's not sponsored by a company, but there is a Capital LGBTQ Association up here in Sacramento if someone's looking to get involved in the Capital community in general up here in Sacramento, California. I'm sure there are equivalents in other states as well. They can join the association. It's free this year for membership because of everything going on. We just felt that was the right thing to do. But you can just go to Capital with an O-L, LGBTQ.org, and get more info there. We have an annual mentorship program, which actually just launched. So it's a little late to apply for mentors this year, but we'll do it again next year. And we had a good group of 20 people involved in that this year, so 10 matches. And that's something that can be helpful for people looking to get their foot in the door somewhere, meet people. There's also different events that the association has. So it's a good thing to keep track of.
Great, thank you. Go ahead.
Yes, and I'm struggling to remember both, but I think it's a Chicano Youth Leadership Project does a fellowship as well, or at least an internship program, in addition to APICA. APICA has an internship program, the former being centered around, you know, bringing Chicano and Latinx youth in to the Capitol for an internship opportunity, and the latter being one for folks in the API community who are trying to get involved in public policy.
Right.
And then, of course, too, I would also say, not sponsored by a company, but put on through Sacramento State, is the Capitol Fellows Program that has four different programs, the Senate, Assembly, Judicial, and Executive Program, which is a great opportunity.
Hey, thank you very much. We've gone a little bit over our time, but if you want to close with, you know, if there's another bill or two that we didn't mention that you think is important and you want to give a quick hit to, please give a mention.
Yeah, I mean, Sevi, I want to take up all the time if you have something in mind. But another one is SB 145, which is a bill to really fix discrimination that's written into the law. So, that's one that we might need some help with moving along this year. But currently the law gives courts discretion to decide if a young adult should go onto the sex offender registry if they are found guilty of having what might be unlawful but voluntary penile vaginal sex with a minor. But that same exception does not apply to other types of sex. So if it's other types of sex, the defendant will be required to go onto the registry. So we're just looking to make sure the law applies uniformly across the board, so that there's not inequality under the law. And there's some other nuances that anyone can get in touch with me if they have questions about it.
That does seem blatantly unfair. If teens of the same sex have sex, they're treated as sex offenders. and that's not true for opposite sex couples. That's it for this week's Out in the Bay. I want to thank our guests, Tammy Martin, Legislative Manager and Lobbyist for Equality California, and Severiano Christian, Senate Consultant for the California Legislature's LGBTQ Caucus. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For links to the organizations mentioned in today's conversation, please see our website, outinthebay.org, where you can also hear this program again, as well as past shows, and share them with your friends, please. While you're there, also please sign up for our e-news and subscribe to our podcast, outinthebay.org. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions, you can find us on Facebook at Out in the Bay and on Twitter and Instagram at OutInTheBaySF, or write to us, outinthebaysf@gmail.com. Our theme music was written and performed by Holly Mead. Big thanks to KSFP for bringing Out in the Bay back on the air. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening, and take good care.
Support for Out in the Bay comes from Comcast, dedicated to serving California communities with access to technology, volunteering time, providing financial support, and connecting people in need to high-speed internet at home. More at california.comcast.com.